Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're now listening to the Sitting in the Park show with Bob. Today is going to be a special show because instead of the usual show where I play all music, I'm doing actually an interview with members of the Chicago group The Trends. Right now up here is one of the members, Jerron Johnson. You want to say hi to the audience?
Hi. Hi, everybody.
And on his way, running a little late, is the other member of the group who is still around in Chicago. That's Emmett Gardner. So hopefully he should be here probably by around 8 o'clock. It's like 7:30 now. So, but we have plenty of information to talk about, so we can get started with the interview. So Jerron was up here a few months ago, actually, when we did the interview with the group, the Channel 3, because, as we talked about before, you were in the group Channel 3, right?
That's true, right.
But you were in the group after The Trends, so The Trends was your original group.
Right, they were. That was the group I did my most recording with on the ABC Paramount Records.
And actually, the original name of The Trends, you guys actually formed in the 50s, right?
True.
And you were originally called Z Majestics, right?
That's right.
So the members of Z Majestics, they all went to school together, right?
Marshall High School.
Okay.
Right.
And you guys all lived in the same area, right, on the west side?
Well, there were a few. Emmett lived on the south side.
Okay.
And Alan Myricks lived south.
Okay.
But they were going to Marshall.
Okay. So what was the original lineup of the first of all, you guys formed around like 56, is that right?
Yeah, that was prior to them graduating, because Emmett, older than I am, it was about the 56 area.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So you guys were still in school, you were like sophomores and juniors when you formed.
Okay.
So the original lineup of Z Majestics, you weren't actually a member of the absolute first group, right?
No, I was not.
So who were the people in the first version of the group?
That was, like I said, Emmett Gardner, Kerry Thomas, Alan Myricks, Clayton O'Neill, and Ralph O'Neill.
Okay. But by the time you recorded your lineup, the time Z Majestics recorded, the lineup had changed to include you.
Yes.
Right, so you're on all the group's recordings. So what happened exactly?
Well, I used to sing with a group called the Elgins.
Okay.
And I was going to Crane. Matter of fact, I started at Crane my first 2 years, and I left and went to Marshall. The group called the Elgins, which we never did record under that name, it was strictly high school, making local gigs in the city of Chicago. The group broke up for some reason that I can't even remember. It's been so long. And as well as I went to Marshall, and this one I really met Emmett Gardner and Ralph O'Neill and them.
So you were in the same schools, and they hooked you up
with
the group. And you brought the other member, Eddie Dunn, into the group, right?
Right. Of course, Eddie come in, and we were the Trends then.
No, okay, Eddie's on the Z Majestics records too, though. Actually, the early.
Oh right, that's why I forgot about Bobby Ann, right?
Yeah, so actually, what was the story like? Why did the other guys in the group leave, and you and Eddie come into the group? Do you remember what the deal was?
Well, I know Kerry for one. Kerry got offered to. He's always into jazz, and excuse me, some of our rehearsals we had quite a lot of modern high-low. For freshman type sound, we used to do.
So you're like a pop type harmony.
Yes, we could get down with it, but we always had that little modernness about us.
You know?
We had a tune we used to do, it was one of our favorites. We used to do it a cappella, and that was one of our show tunes, "Autumn Leaves." And, we did a really splendid job doing that. But Kerry, back to Kerry. Kerry's offered to jazz as well. That was my reason for saying that, and he. Got a piano, and he got over to the jazz, and Kerry just kind of like faded out of the R&B area.
Okay, and a lot of the other members left too, right? You were saying Alan Myrick, and you were saying there were a few other members, and they left before you.
Alan, I really can't remember why Alan left. Clayton just got tired of singing, you know.
Okay. So what was the ultimate lineup of the group finally when you finally recorded record?
Which one?
The first record, Bobby Ann. It became your lineup was the same pretty much once you had that lineup.
Yes, Eddie Dunn, Ralph O'Neill, Emmy Garner, and myself.
Okay, so what were the different parts that the people sang?
Emmy was second tenor, Ralph first tenor, Eddie Dunn lead, and myself baritone bass.
Okay, well I think I'll play this first record that you guys did. And then we could talk more about it. This record is really nice. This is called Bobby Ann, and this came out, I think, around 58, I think.
Yeah, really.
And if anyone has any questions, you can call up here at 773-702-8424. And this first record is Z Majestics with a really nice doo-wop record called Bobby Ann. Okay, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Sitting in the Park show on WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. Today, we're doing a special interview with members of the group The Trends. The Trends had their big hit with Check My Tears. You might remember that song. And we just played the first record, which they released under the name Z Majestics, I think in 1958, around that time. And that record, that actually came out on a label called Fox. And that label was actually owned by famous Chicago DJ Richard Stams. So, Jerron, I was wondering if you could talk about, you don't remember how you got hooked up with him or the record label, do you?
No, it's really hard. I do remember where his office was on Roosevelt Road or off of Central Park or Holman, something like in that area. And, wow, at that time, we were definitely green of the market.
Yeah, it was the first. You'd only been around for a couple of years, and you got a recording already. And
right. We like I said, we did a lot of local stuff. So
yeah, I think Ralph O'Neill told me that he saw you at a show or something like that. I don't remember the details.
You mean how we met?
Yeah, how you met Richard Stans.
Oh, possibly at one of the shows, and he made offer we could refuse, you know.
Okay.
Especially recording, you know, we were up in there about recording, so.
Okay, and singing lead on that record is Eddie Dunn, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he has a very nice voice on that.
Yes, he does.
So, but you were telling me that you wrote the song, is that right?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I put, like, the melody together. I said Eddie because he named it after his first wife,
okay.
Bobby Ann. And I messed around chording on a piano downstairs in church one day and come up with a little melody, and I took it back to rehearsal, and the guys kind of went for it, and Eddie started crooning a little bit here and there, and we pieced it together like so.
So you wrote, like, the melody, and Eddie wrote most of the lyrics?
Yes.
That's how it worked. Okay, so the other side of the record is a track called Garland's Mambo. And on this track, I think that's probably in reference to, like, a kind of changed version of Emmett Garner's name.
Right, right.
Yeah, so he's actually, Emmett Garner is singing lead on this record, and it's like a dance record from, like, the time, like a mambo record, I guess. So I'll play that record. This is the B-side of The Majestic's first record. This track is called Garland's Mambo. Okay, you're listening to Sitting in the Park on WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. Today we're doing an interview with the Chicago group The Trends. Right now up here is Jerron Johnson, and hopefully arriving soon will be Emmett Garner. That was just the B-side of your first record. There's a dance record called Garland's Mambo, and that had Emmett saying lead on that record.
Yeah.
And one thing that's interesting about your group is you were the first group that guitarist Phil Upchurch worked with, right?
That's right.
So you knew him from school?
Marshall. Yeah.
Okay. So you became, like, the absolute first people he worked with. He became more famous. He worked later with the Cool Gents. He became the Cool Gents guitarist.
Delector Clark, D. Clark.
Yeah, he worked. I'm pretty sure he plays on Raindrops. And,
yeah.
And then he had his huge hit with Can't Sit Down.
Can't Sit Down, right.
But he got his start actually playing guitar with you guys, right?
That's right.
So, do you remember, like, any of the shows you did? Ralph was actually telling me about, he said after you graduated, Marshall High School brought you back to do, like, a show, like some kind of jamboree. They actually brought you back to the school to do some kind of jamboree.
Yes, he brought it to mind. I really forgot about that. It was really, it really, really touched us because all the jamborees at jamborees like all amateurs that we had at school. We had a nice stage, and there were several groups, and we were one of the favorite groups of Marshall in that time, back in 57, 56.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and someone else was telling me, actually, they remembered you doing a show at the Regal, actually, and it was probably late 50s, early 60s, something like that, and they said it was you guys and Mary Johnson, who was another artist who recorded on Richard Stan's label, and Tiny Thompson, and he said there was some kind of exotic dancer there.
Lucky the Bombshell. I forgot the other one. They were local yokels, you know.
Okay, yeah. He said they bent over and, like, moved their butt in exotic ways.
Right.
But yeah, he said that you guys were a big dancing group back then. Like, you had a lot of choreography in your show. Do you remember doing a lot of that?
Yeah, I've always loved to dance, and it took a while for us to get certain things together, and through rehearsals, and we had a pretty good choreography group, you know.
Okay, and yeah, you were doing it, before the Temptations were out, so they're the most famous dancing group, I guess. So the after you had one more record, you released as The Majestics. Actually, one thing I didn't ask is you don't remember how they came up with the name The Majestics, do you?
No, I really don't.
Yeah, Ralph said it was just a name that you guys came up with when I was talking to him.
Well, when in school, we were the Majestics.
Okay.
And I really believe that they said there was another group out there called the Majestics, and so we said we didn't want to really take our name away, so we put the Z.
Oh, okay.
In front, I believe that was something like that. That's how it went, right?
Yeah, and the reason I keep talking about Ralph on the air when he's not here is he's actually in Michigan. Right, he's a pastor in Michigan now, so he couldn't come down for the interview, and but Emmett should be here soon. So I'll play the other your final record as Z Majestics, and this actually came out on two labels. One of the labels, I think it was the original label called Sign, and then it also came out on ABC Records, which is like a big label. So you don't remember anything about how you got affiliated with these labels, do you?
No, ABC, I knew Johnny Pate was the arranger for ABC.
Okay.
Because he was doing the impressions as well, the Marbolos. And
yeah, this was even before, this record came out actually even before the impressions, the Marbles were on the label, because this must be like 59, 60, something like that. But, yeah, we'll definitely talk about Johnny Pate later in the show. Like, yeah, he was the main arranger for ABC and,
right.
Worked with the Impressions and Mighty Marvelous, all the groups. So, but I'll play this record and then we can talk more. This is Z Majestics, and this track is called Sapphire.
Thank you.
Okay, that was just Z Majestics with their last record called Sapphire. That was kind of, it had like a R&B kind of, almost like a novelty sound, right?
Yes.
You said singing lead on that record was Emmett Garner, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And you said you were doing the bass noises and what you saw.
Some of the bass parts I come in, that was me, right?
And one thing that you sort of developed, actually, after it became one of the key parts of your sound was you always, in a lot of your songs you did, like jazz and kind of pop style harmonies, right?
Right.
You were talking in the beginning how you really like the harmonies of like the Four Freshmen, and in that song even you said near the end you sort of did a little bit of that, right?
Right, we put a little blend in there, right?
So when you were doing shows, you did a lot of those types of songs, right?
We did. Autumn Leaves is one of our acapella songs that we really specialized in, and that was part of our show, and we did it quite well.
Okay, and one person that we didn't talk about was there was somebody named Tommy Dorsey who became involved with your group, right?
Yeah, Tommy did a lot of the writing for the group prior to me coming with the group. He played guitar enough to write tunes, and he did a lot of the writing of some of the tunes that they'll be hearing tonight.
Okay. Yeah, he doesn't have writing credits on those first two, but on a lot of the ABC and Smash records, your next set of records, he wrote a lot of those songs.
Yes, he did.
So I guess for a few years, I guess you didn't record after that last record, so you stayed as Z Majestics, and then you eventually, I think around 64, you recorded your first record as The Trends. So do you remember any of the story behind, like, what happened in between that time? Like, were you trying to record? Were you doing a lot of shows? Like, what was happening?
No, I really, you know, to go back on it, it's so hard to remember what the break in the action there.
Okay. Yeah, Emmett was actually saying before that you guys had auditioned for a couple record labels before you got to ABC Records and Johnny Pate. Or actually, you worked on Smash Records first. And he said one of the people you auditioned for Wonderful Records, which is like the label that Alvin Cash and like the Sharpies and a lot of Chicago groups were on. Mm-hmm. And he said you auditioned for Andre Williams.
Andre, yes.
Yeah.
Sure did.
And right. And then at the time, he said it was like a toss-up between you auditioned for Andre Williams and Johnny Pate, and you thought you'd rather go with Johnny Pate at the time.
Right, Johnny Pate. He was. That's the only one really was on our side. But Johnny Pate was strictly an arranger, you know, and the producer for ABC Chicago.
Okay.
And far as after he did his beautiful job of recording us, you know, it was up to the next person to get the record out there and run with it, you know.
Okay. So this next record I'm going to play is the very first record you recorded as The Trends, and this actually wasn't on ABC Records, even though Johnny Pate was mainly involved with ABC. It's on Smash Records, which is a division of Mercury Records, which was also in Chicago at the time. And I think Emmett was saying that he originally got you on this label before he got you onto ABC. And this first record is just one of my all-time favorite Chicago soul songs. It's just, I don't know, it's just a really nice sort of early Chicago soul song. And I think Eddie Dunn is singing lead on this record. We'll play this record and talk some more. This is The Trends with To Be Happy Enough.
Together we win.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM. In Chicago, you're listening to the Sitting in the Park show today. We're doing an interview with The Trends. That was just the first record you recorded for Smash Records. That was right after you changed your name to The Trends. Do you remember the story behind why you changed your name or anything like that?
Well, like I said, with the, you mean far as The Trends?
Yeah.
No, didn't want to really, well, by Tommy being in the group and writing,
okay.
I think that's why they managed to keep the name going, you know.
Okay, and actually, I think Emmett might be here, so we should get the phone, but I'll play your second Smash record next, and this record sort of illustrates the sound. One of the things that we were talking about, how you had a more sort of jazzy, like that last record was a really nice sort of Chicago soulful sound, but you also had like a jazzy kind of modern sound. So you can hear it in the second record. The second record is called Get Something Going. Okay, that was just The Trends. I just played actually the wrong song. That was the B-side of their first record as The Trends. That was called Dance With Me, Baby. And that was that also had a similar kind of jazzy dance kind of sound that we were talking about. But next I'll play the actual song that I had meant to play. This is The Trends with Get Something Going.
Come on, we got
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM. In Chicago, you're listening to the City in the Park show. Today is a special show. I'm doing an interview with the Chicago group, The Trends. Right now, Jerron Johnson of The Trends is up here. And hopefully Emmett Garner will be up here soon. That was just the second record you released under the name The Trends. That was called Get Something Going. That was on Smash Records. And one thing Emmett was telling me earlier was one of the reasons you changed your name to The Trends was you sat down with Johnny Payton. You wanted like a name that sort of indicated like the modern kind of jazzy sound you're trying to come up with. So that's like a new trend was sort of the idea you came up with. I don't know. Maybe he'll fill in a little more details when he's here. And then after on the B side of this record I just played, actually there's a woman singing, which is interesting because we didn't mention any women in the group before. And I think you guys were telling me before that the woman is actually Carol Dorsey. Is that right?
That was her name. Right.
Yeah, she's probably related to Tommy, but you don't remember if she was Tommy's wife or...
No, I don't.
Or sister or what the story was.
No, I really don't.
Okay, well, anyways, I think Tommy Dorsey wrote that song. He wrote most of the Trends records. So this next... I'll play the song with Carol singing if we have time at the end of the show, because you recorded a lot of records. There's two records on Smash, and then I think six different records you recorded on ABC Records. So that's like that's like 16 songs right there. You guys had a lot of recorded output. So hopefully we'll get time to play most of it. And as we were saying, one of your things that you did was you had a different kind of jazzy, kind of pop-ish sound that not really a lot of groups were doing at the time.
Right.
So a lot of your records, they came out with like one sort of soulful side and then one kind of jazzy kind of pop sounding side. So this first ABC record is one of them. The soulful side is really nice. This is called Not Too Old to Cry, and then I'll play the B side of it afterwards.
If you don't
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today is a special interview I'm doing with the Trends, and the other member who was supposed to be here finally arrived. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Hello, Image Gun is my name.
Okay. So so there are four on all these, on almost all these records, there are four members, right? So the other person was Eddie Dunn, and Eddie Dunn passed away recently.
Yes,
right?
Yes, that's my guy.
And the other person is Raph O'Neill, who's living in Michigan now, so he couldn't
make it. That's correct, right.
And one thing we were talking about earlier was singing on the song "That's the Way the Story Goes" was was a female named Carol Dorsey.
Yeah, I heard you saying that. That was his wife.
Oh, that was his wife.
They were married. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cool. Well, now we got that. So, when, and also, do you remember when you got hooked up with Tommy Dorsey? He wasn't helping you from the start, right?
No, he wasn't with us from the start. I can't remember how we really got with Tommy. It could have been from school. I don't really remember.
Okay.
Because either he was introduced to us, because we were looking for a guitar player.
Okay.
And he was one that after Philip Upchurch left us, we were looking for somebody to play, you know, an instrument.
Okay.
And I don't remember how we got with Tommy, but that's how we hooked up.
Okay.
You know, finally he come by and audition, and we decided we were going to use him to play, and found out that he do the writing and everything else. This was after the things we had on Fox, and that basically was it. But he was with us when we made our first recording on ABC.
Okay. Yeah, he definitely wrote that first Smash record, even that To Be Happy Enough.
But, you know, I thought Smash was part of ABC. But
I think it's Mercury only.
I know that, but I don't remember having any of dealings with Mercury at all as far as the Trends go.
It's definitely a mystery.
Maybe, no, maybe Johnny Pate had something to do with that, because, you know, they had a lot of different kind of things that they do. He was in total control of what we did.
Okay.
We had no idea what was going on.
Okay.
You know, all we had to do was sing.
Okay.
You know, and Johnny took care of all the business, you know, and he was a little closer with Tommy because of the writing and the publishing and that type thing.
Okay.
But I think he had something to do with either leasing it to them or giving it to them, because we never did anything with them on paper that I know of.
Okay. So this next record, you did a lot of records for ABC, actually, like we're saying, like there's at least six of them. And before this next, the biggest hit you ever had was Check My Tears, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so I'm going to play that record next. One thing that's weird about the record is I swear that ABC originally released it with the other side, a song called Don't Drop Out of School, as like the promo side. Like,
yeah.
I have copies, a promo copy where like they originally starred that side, and then it's X'd out, and they said to play the other side instead.
Yeah.
So I think maybe they originally sent it out with the wrong side as the promo, but definitely you were saying that Check My Tears was intended to be the A side of the record. Is that right?
Yes, but you know, there was a thing going on about school and that type thing, and Johnny was trying to capitalize off of that, you know, don't drop out of school, go back to school, but it didn't come off the way that we wanted it to be.
Well, I'll play that side too, but This next record I'll play first is your biggest hit. This is Check My Tears, and then we'll talk more about it.
Okay.
Take my tears, ooh, baby.
okay, that was just the Trends with their biggest hit with Check My Tears. Had almost like an Impressions kind of sound on that, real nice harmony.
Yeah, I could go along with that one.
Yeah. Jerron was saying that was actually written by the Artistics, is that right?
Yeah, he was, we was trying to get with Brunswick at the time, and they was doing their thing, but it didn't happen. It was just, after ABC, that was it.
But yeah, but you're saying the Artistics actually wrote that record?
One of the guys in Artistics.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Which
Larry one? Johnson.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and you guys were from the same neighborhood as Artistics,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Jerron was telling me actually he helped form the group or something like that.
Right, we lived over around Al's Hot Dog, Francisco on Lake Street area. And Larry Johnson, we had a young man, Kirk Thomas. I guess Aaron was around then, and it was really rough starting, but I put them together, and because I was singing with the, like I said, Majestic Zen.
Okay.
So they continued on, and they formed the Artistics and went on,
Okay. So so we just played your biggest hit, Check My Tears. So did that song get a lot of radio play in Chicago?
Yeah, we was top 10.
Yeah, Pick of the Week started out on WBON.
Yeah, it was hot for a while. Yeah. We really thought we was on our way to be, big stars.
Okay.
But the problem is, I find later on, as I got more involved in the music business, that we wasn't involved in the music.
Yeah.
The business part of it. We was not part of the program to make ABC go. And that was it. We figured if we had Johnny Pate, we had everything. But he was only A&R director. He had nothing to do with promotions and sales, and we was not in the plan, and that's very important.
Yeah, like that definitely. Almost very few groups made it, and the ones that did were the ones who were like Curtis Mayfield. He was a businessman, always in control of both the business and the music.
And that was he was on ABC.
Yeah,
that's why we didn't make it.
Yeah, they were the big.
It was Curtis and was Leroy Hudson. Y'all went to Kurt Tom later, but they were actually on ABC. Right?
Yeah, the Marvelous were the other group.
So that we were the third group, and all three groups was handled by Johnny Pate from production standpoint of view.
Okay.
And we were just a low guy on a tow pole, and we didn't understand that. If we had known and understood the business, we probably could have did something about it, because you got to help yourself,
Yeah.
A good manager, maybe, or maybe someone financially control. Because the reason why we was thinking it was going to happen, because everywhere we go, we blow the guys away. They said, this group here is like, the fifth dimension. They're going to make it. They are in another category.
I'll never forget the word they used. We were
too good. Yeah. that wasn't a good thing, because it wasn't in the mainstream of what black R&B music was about.
Yeah, like definitely we were talking earlier, you had like a kind of jazzy, kind of pop edge. And but you couldn't really cross over unless ABC promoted it in that way. Yeah.
And it was really a shame, because we had a great act, and people liked us. But we just weren't exposed,
So did you start getting a lot more shows, though, once you had the hit with Check My Tears?
We did around locally and a few other places, like New York and a few other places. But it didn't really happen, because in most cases, they didn't even know how to get in touch with us.
Okay, just because ABC
exactly. And we didn't have a marketing program where we had a manager and an office, and it was just
booking
terrible.
Agency.
Yeah, I was trying to get with a booking agency, but that didn't happen either, because Eddie Thomas was the promotion man for ABC and he got the impressions with the booking agency. I think it was what's the name of the agency they had? Mm. It was the biggest one they had in those days out of Chicago. It used to be out on Wabash and Lake Street.
I'm not sure which one.
Yeah, but it was very popular. I wish I could call the name. You'd know right away. But that's where all the acts were.
Okay.
And we couldn't get signed there.
Okay. So the problem was that you just didn't have control of the business.
Didn't
you
have no connections.
So I think we'll talk a little bit more, but I'll play the B side of this, or which might have been the A side originally, the Don't Drop Out of School record, just because it's an appropriate time of the year. School's just starting. So I'll send this out to all the new students. This is the Trends with Don't Drop Out of School.
Don't drop out of school. Don't drop out of school. Don't drop. they've never had it so hard. Don't drop out of school. Don't drop out of school. Don't drop out of school. You might grow up to be a fool.
Okay, that was just the Trends with the other side of their hit "Check My Tears." That was "Don't Drop Out of School." And the guy who told me he had seen you guys play with Mary Johnson and the exotic dancer Tiny Thompson. He said I got the venue wrong. He said it was the Arena Theater, not the Regal Theater. He said like 1400 West Roosevelt.
I remember now. Yes.
Yeah. So you guys ended up doing a lot more shows after "Check My Tears" came out.
We did a lot of local, vendors that they don't have today. You know, it's like little clubs.
Okay.
You know, we didn't do a lot of big shows, but we did a lot of clubs. And we were trying to get to that point.
Okay.
But it didn't happen.
Okay. Do you don't remember any of the artists you performed with, do you?
Well, you know, we was on the show with a bunch of them, but, you know, we was on the show with one time with the Impressions.
Okay.
We was on the show with
Hyde Park.
Yeah, Hyde Park. We was on the show with the guy had the Monkey Times.
Major Lance.
You know, most local stuff. But we always like was, you know, the last act, first act coming on.
Okay.
But a lot of guys didn't want to come behind us because we tore the crowds up, you know.
Yeah.
Because the kind of sound we had, we're very clean act. They like, you know what I mean? It was something different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, this next record I'm going to play, it was another sort of minor hit for you, but this kind of typifies the whole kind of pop soul sound they were talking about. This record is the Big Parade.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and actually, Ralph O'Neill was telling me that when this song came out, it had a real nice kind of popish soul song, and he said this song got crushed on radio play by the Fifth Dimension. He said he said they had that song Up and Away at the time.
That's
Your song, he thought your song would have been a hit if they hadn't had a similar sounding.
Oh, yes, a lot of politics, they said they weren't going to let it happen because, you know, who are these guys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's so crazy, but that's the way it go.
Okay, well, I'll play this record and we could talk more. This is The Trends with The Big Parade.
Thank you.
again, I screwed up and played the wrong song. That was the Trends with Thanks for a Little Lovin'. I meant to play the Big Parade, which I'll play next. But you guys were telling me, actually, when the Big Parade came out, you got onto local TV, right?
Yeah.
So what shows were you on?
Oh, God. What was the name of those shows they had?
Ralph was telling me it was like Jim...
what was it? The Chicago over downtown, the dance show they had.
Yeah, that's the only thing they had at this time. I forgot the name of it. But Jim somebody.
It was on Channel 9, he said.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you get real good. You got a lot of calls from that.
You know, yeah, he said you had, like, or you guys were telling me, actually, you had, like, some dance for the big parade that you had worked out.
Yes, we did it there.
Yeah. Do you remember how to do it?
Ooh, no. I remember how to go. But I can't move around and do it.
So, but you were definitely getting some like local buzz after the song came out.
We were one of the hottest groups in the city.
Okay.
From that standpoint, we didn't know how to market ourselves. We missed a lot of work because we didn't know how to do it.
Okay.
And I'm ashamed to say it, but that was the truth. You know, all we know to do is sing. Mm-hmm. I've learned a lot since then.
Okay.
But it was really amazing how much you don't know as an artist when all you do is love the music and do it. You know, that's the matter of your career.
Yeah.
And they do what's best for them. They go to the next move. I don't blame John F. Pate for anything, but he was the reason why we didn't make it, because he was only interested in production.
Yeah.
You know,
he didn't push
you. He gave it to the company, and then that's it. You know, but promotion, man, they weren't going to do nothing with us.
Yeah, so I'll play the correct record now. This is the Big Parade. And this has, like, we're talking about the sort of pop, the song that that you got. You had the same kind of sound as the Fifth Dimension, and then you got kind of... So this is the Big Parade, the Trends with the Big Parade. Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. Today is a special edition of the Sitting in the Park show because I'm doing an interview with the Trends up here. I'm talking to Jaron Johnson and Emmett Garner, who are members of the group. And a caller just called in, a caller who's actually in another soul group who performed on the same show. He said that the guy's name was Jim Longsbury.
Yeah.
So, and that's thanks a lot to John. He was in a group called the Marlins. And he said that you guys were telling me on the same episode, Ruby Andrews.
Yeah, she was just getting started at that point. She had Casanova.
Okay.
And she had some an independent company, and they were doing it for her.
Okay.
They was getting people to produce her from Josh and Armstead.
I think Giant Productions.
Yeah, and so they had a guy by the name of Ricardo Williams and Mel Collins.
Okay.
Mel Collins was basically running it, and they were putting their money together, and they was promoting her.
Yeah.
They're spending money. That's what you have to do.
Yeah, well, Rick Williams, he owned the record label then, Zodiac Records. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so I guess eventually what happened is we'll definitely play more Trends records if we have time at the end, but you guys released a lot of records on ABC. It was weird that you never had an album, actually. Like, even the Marvelous had an album, too, and they had fewer records on ABC than you did, I think. But I guess what happened is, I guess around 69 was your last record on ABC, and I guess they didn't renew the contract with you guys.
No.
We didn't want to get renewed because we didn't want to get tied up again. You know, they weren't doing anything, all those records, so.
We thought we were going to be able to do something different, but the group got despondent, and it happens like that.
Yeah, Ralph was telling me that you had auditioned for a couple other labels, so he told me you auditioned for Kurtom and Brunswick Records at the time, too.
Right.
But I guess nothing happened with that.
No, at that point, because, again, that was Curtis Mayfield.
Okay.
And we had just came from ABC.
Okay.
On the same label, so they weren't interested in having that kind of competition. And Brunswick already had their hands full with Jackie Wilson and all the other artists there. Tom Davis, you know, wasn't no room. So we were just stuck between a rock and a hard and a nail, you know. We just couldn't seem to get it going, didn't have any money to do it ourselves.
Yeah, but I guess one interesting thing that happened is, like, a lot of groups kind of, you know, this happened to the Marvelous, I think, like, they get bitter that they didn't get promoted, and people...
Well, you can feel like that.
But then you guys actually went on, like, you Emmett went to work in the industry, and Jerron actually went to become in another group, so...
Yeah.
So, but I'm interested, actually, if... we already talked about Jerron's group on another time, because he was in Channel 3.
Yeah.
Later.
Yeah.
But I want to hear what happened to you, actually, after this, because you actually got involved with the industry, right?
Yeah, well, first of all, I was just refused to... believed that we wasn't stars, and I couldn't get the guys to go any further, so I decided to do something myself. I took my own money,
okay,
and recorded my song, and I still didn't do any better.
Yeah, but you had one solo record, and it got released on Maxwell Records.
Yeah, felt in the same kind of situation that I did with the group. Maxwell had they had Faith, Hope, and Charity.
Benny King was on.
Yeah, and they also had that. Guy that did, what his name, he was the guy that did the he was an instrumental guy. He died now. But he did all the music for most of the stuff. Van McCoy.
Oh, okay. Van McCoy.
Right. So then come Emmett Garner.
Okay.
You know what I mean? They signed me because they liked my sound, but they didn't do anything with it. You know, they paid me for my music, and that was it. So I just knew I was on my way. I also had a chance that I blew to be with Stack Records because I had auditioned for Stack Records. It was myself and the Staple Singers, and the only reason why I didn't go because I was dumb.
Okay.
So they wanted to change my song that
to make
that,
it southern sound.
Yeah, that Tommy had wrote.
Oh, okay.
And they wanted to rewrite it, and he didn't want to go for it. So we said, we don't need you guys. We didn't know Al Bell was going to be as big as he is today.
Yeah.
So we made a lot of bad decisions by not having an idea of what we was dealing with. Staple Singers went on to be big.
Yeah.
Maybe I would have been big, too. But the thing is, you know, we're doing the regrets. You know, I said, well, that don't work. I'll do something else. And I started trying to find out what it really was that we were missing. That's how I got involved in promotions.
Okay. Well, I would have played the one record you produced on yourself before. So this record, actually, you produced it, and you pretty much had recorded the whole song, and then you had to just shopped it around a different label.
Right.
Is that right?
But you know who my producer, my arranger was?
It was Donnie Hathaway.
Yeah.
Right?
That was before he became who he was. And I just knew that, hey, you know, this guy's, you know, he's going to be okay because he just did the ghetto that had just, he at that time he was not very popular.
Yeah. But he definitely had his hand, he had involved a lot of Chicago.
Yeah.
And a lot of Chicago people.
Exactly. So I just knew this was going to be able to record this in a nice studio down on the, off of State Street in Rush. I said, well, hey, I'll try it again. I got on a plane with New York and found me a deal.
Okay.
So I just knew I was on my way then, but the deal still wasn't any better than what I had before, because the guy sounded very enthused about what he's going to do with me, blah, 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 and it never happened.
Okay, so you recorded, there were two sides to the record. One was Check Out What You Got, and the other was So Much Better.
Right.
Which one should I play?
So Much Better.
Okay.
I got some airplay on that.
Okay, and there's two female people, two women singing backup on this record. Who are the women singing backup on the record?
Well, the only one that I can remember was Carol.
Okay, you said it, Layla Hathaway.
Oh, yeah, Layla Hathaway. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Layla Hathaway, who was Donnie's wife.
Okay.
And I forgot about her. And also Leroy Hudson's wife.
Oh, okay. They were singing.
They were the ones in the background. I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that's interesting because they were the same people singing background. Gerald Dickerson had told me they were the same people singing background on Lucky Fellow. The
right, because see, we were involved in that.
Yeah.
See, I was a manager of Maurice Jackson.
Yeah.
And so we decided we couldn't do it on ourselves. We'd do it with someone else.
Okay.
And he did the production on that also.
Okay, well, I'll play the record So Much Better, and then we'll talk some more. Okay, we're back here in the studio with the Trends. Thanks a lot again for you guys to come down and tell your story. I appreciate getting the story out.
It's a pleasure just being here, you know.
Right.
Letting the people know that there was something going on, and thanks to people like yourself that a little history could be, you know, exposed, because who knows about the Trends? You understand? I mean, now overseas, I understand that things happen.
Yeah, there's definitely. I didn't play the record, but we'll play it if we have time. There's definitely like a one big record in the UK that's real collectible. But yeah, that definitely. You know, there's a lot of great music that just got lost because people didn't have the money or the promotion.
Exactly.
So it's good to get the story out. But I'm definitely interested in. So you actually, getting the rest of your story. So you actually once. so you still weren't able to get a big hit, even though you had, you know, produced your own record.
Right.
And so what happened with your career after that?
Well, people started recognizing that I was one person that was not going to stop. So one day a guy named Eddie Thompson said, why don't you just stop singing and start doing promotions, because you push yourself a whole lot. And I started working with him for a little bit of nothing to learn the business. And the next thing you know, I had a job at a place called Raw Disc Distributors.
Okay.
And that's a place where, you know, when I said job, I was learning and doing it at the same time, because my intention was to go back and get my group.
Okay.
And put it together, but it didn't happen. But I learned how to make it happen. I learned how to promote records and get them played. I learned how to market. And that's from working at that place called Raw Disc, because at that time, you know, they only had one promotion man for the whole line.
Okay.
King Records and Brunswick, all of them came through there. And Eddie Thomas got me the job.
Okay.
So after I got that job, I went from there to London Records.
Okay.
Distributors, and the rest is history. I discovered a lot of, you know, other artists in that area that I was responsible for getting played. But it wasn't the same satisfaction. You know?
So what were some of the artists that you worked with? A lot of the high records artists,
oh, yeah.
Right? So you worked with like Al Green.
Al Green, Phil Johnson, who was somewhat popular at the time. What's this guy's name? This pop guy, Humperdinck.
Humperdinck.
Yeah, I had him.
Okay.
Tom Jones.
Okay.
And then from there, I went to work for Buddha Records.
Okay.
And I again inherited Curtis Mayfield. I had a group called The Honeycombs, Bill Withers.
Okay.
You know.
So you were the main, like, A&R guy for all those groups?
No, promotions. I wasn't A&R.
Okay.
I was the promotion guy that went to the radio stations and was talking to a job like yourself.
Okay.
And got it played. Everybody loved me because I was getting the job done, but they was all making the money because they had commissions. I learned that later on, too.
Okay. And also, you produced a lot of records, too, right? Like I know you were involved with that Five Crowns.
Yes, I did.
So that was like a local product, yes. Records that you produced, and, yes. And the Maurice Jackson we were just talking about.
Yes, I did that also.
So you were definitely... After you got ripped off in the industry, you became involved in a sort of important person in the music industry.
Somewhat. I made money. I made a living after that job for it. You know, I ended up being the vice president of Curtime Records.
Okay.
And that time, it exposed me to a whole lot of other things, you know, in the industry. You know, I had Patti LaBelle. I had, the Blue Notes.
Okay.
You know, all those people had to come through me. But this was before they got popular.
Yeah.
So it made me be a hero because...
You got to break a lot
exactly,
of artists.
Exactly, yeah. So I made good money doing that. But it still wasn't the same satisfaction as being an artist, so...
That's true, but at least it's a better story than, like, people who just... You know, like, a lot of artists... Everyone in Chicago got ripped off, and they usually packed up their bags and kind of gave up.
So that was one of the reasons why I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to do something that the other people wasn't doing. I wanted to give these guys some kind of a hand. And then sometimes I couldn't because I was also told who I had to promote.
Okay.
You know, because I ended up managing the Notations.
Yeah.
And I couldn't even get them played because the fact is I had five other acts that I had to do first. You know, and if I didn't do that, I didn't have a job.
Yeah.
So I ended up not getting them exposed like I really wanted to.
But they did get hits
We did some things that was secondary.
Okay.
But it never was where... You know, Leroy Hudson was, the Natural Four.
Yeah.
You know, the Impressions.
Okay.
You know.
Okay, well, now that we have more time, I'll be playing some of the records we didn't get to go to, get to play, because we've got about 15 minutes left. If anyone has any questions for the group, you can call up here. The number is 773-702-8424. This next record is the one we were talking about where Carol Dorsey is actually singing on it. This is called That's the Way the Story Goes.
Yeah.
You couldn't leave.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. We're doing a special Sitting in the Park show today because we're doing an interview with the Chicago group, The Trends, who came up to tell their story. So we got most of the story out, so now I'm playing some sort of a lot of... You recorded a lot of records, so I'm playing some of the records we didn't get to so far. That was just... That's the way the story goes, which is the B-side of your second Smash record. And it actually had Carol Dorsey singing on it. I think that that's the only one that she ended up singing lead on.
Right, right.
Yeah, so, but did she sing on any of the other records?
She was always on the background.
Okay.
Yeah, only on the shows. She didn't record with this.
Okay.
But she did the shows, you know, add a little bit more flavor to it, because she had a nice, tender voice that wasn't sounding female-ish, you know?
Okay.
So it was really blending just right with us.
Okay.
So she was on the show with us when we did that. And we, like I said, we did a few out-of-town things. You know.
Okay. Do you remember some of the cities you did shows
yeah,
in?
Yeah, we did. We did some things in Detroit. We did some things in Indianapolis.
Okay.
In the Midwest, basically. You know?
Okay. Okay, well, this next record I'm going to play is another one of your ABC records. This track is called No One There.
I did not.
Okay, that was just two of the trends. ABC Records, first was No One There, and next was a really nice one called I Never Knew How Good I Had It. This next one I'm going to play is the last record you guys released before you left ABC Records. This is called Not Another Day. Okay, we're almost out of time. This has been a special Sitting in the Park show. It's been an interview with the Chicago group The Trends, who released a lot of excellent songs, but just never had that big break. And one other story that, well, first of all, one other detail which we didn't get to earlier was, Emmy was just telling me that Sapphire, the second record by Z Majestics, even though it came out on ABC Records, actually Richard Stams was involved with that record.
Exactly, yes.
And but one thing that we didn't get to was when I was talking to Raph O'Neill on the phone, he told me that one of the last shows you did was with the Jackson 5.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Do you remember anything about it? He said that you guys did the show with them, and they were just you guys didn't know much about them. They were just kids, and then later they had their big hit, and you were like, right. Those are the guys we did the show with.
They were waiting to get on. That one.
After it was a talent show, remember?
Right. And, you know, the guy was, 9 years old, whatever. And they weren't even supposed to be in the club, you know, but they was, doing their thing.
Okay.
And we thought they should be
on. We were winning every week, and they brought them in, and they started throwing money on the stage for them, you know, little kids or whatever, but they beat us out, of course. But
yeah, we used to be on the shows with the shot lights, and we beat them all out, you know.
Okay.
And win the contest, and the guy run off with the money. won 5 weeks in a row. Number one. But
where was the contest, you remember?
A place called Buttland.
Okay.
It was on 64th and Cottage Grove. Very popular at that time. Right. A place that groups would, you know, go sing.
They just renovated that theater, right?
No, they didn't.
No, it was the theater. Right down in the basement.
Oh, okay. See, the Buttland was on the east side of the street. West side of the street. The place you're talking about is called Grand Ball.
It was
on the other side.
Yeah.
Was, you know, we did shows there too.
Oh yeah,
okay. It was like a ballroom.
Okay,
a lot of shows there, but a lot of private people, groups gave shows there. You know,
okay,
clubs and organizations. So we were pretty popular with them.
Okay,
but Buttland was a place that the Spaniards and all those old groups,
right.
got started. Well, there. You know? Otis Clay, I saw when he first started there.
Matter of fact, the Grand Ballroom is about the only thing that's coming back. I understand they're going to do the Persian Ballroom again, I understand.
Really?
But the Grand Ballroom is really a landmark for that area, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, again, I have to say thanks again for you guys coming up here and telling your story. It's very interesting.
And, at least.
Yeah. And also, one person we didn't talk about was what happened to Tommy Dorsey when the group broke up.
Tommy was a very strange guy.
Okay.
He really didn't like to be involved in music too much, and he took all his equipment and just got rid of it and went to Atlanta.
Okay.
And he got a big photo place down there. He got a big he do pictures.
Okay.
Very talented. Make a lot of money doing that.
Okay. And Ralph O'Neill became like a pastor, right?
Yes.
Okay. So he's in Michigan now.
Yes.
So we're just out of time. The last song I'll play is the B side of your last ABC record called "You Sure Know How to Hurt a Guy," although it'll probably be faded for the next show. So, but again, thanks again for you guys coming up.
Thank you so very much.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye.